Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you for inviting me out here to share my experience, strength, and hope. Ooh, it's hot in here. To accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'm so grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. How awesome was LeBron, man? You know, in listening to LeBron share, I realized him and I got clean together. I got clean April 14, 2001. So sitting there listening to him, realizing what a blessing it is to walk this journey with somebody. I got here when I was pretty young, as did he, and to watch what this program does, the miracles of this program, you know, and I'm so grateful to be here. Again, thank you. Does this sound... Thank you to the committee. Thank you to Amanda. You know, I felt so welcomed. You know, she was texting, asking what song we wanted, and just the atmosphere of recovery. I feel it in here, you know, and my song was supposed to be Back to Reality. I didn't hear that, but you know that song? Back to life, back to reality. So, I intentionally picked that song when she asked, because when I was in my active addiction, I was not in reality, man. I was in a different world, and it says that in our literature, you know, we're in a different world, and I was completely disassociated when I was using. The literature also taught me that reality is being in a spiritual place. When I'm in reality, I'm in my spiritual condition is I'm ready to change. I'm admitting that I have a problem. I'm in reality. I'm not in denial. So I came to Narcotics Anonymous through jail. Like the lady said, I couldn't stop going to jail, and I didn't know why. I really thought that police were following me when they weren't following me. I'll just qualify. I was like so crazy. I would get off the exits to make sure that the cars were not following me, and I still didn't know if they were following me. And then I would say, why do they keep? I think for 2 years I was arrested maybe 10 times. It wasn't my fault. It was, why won't they leave me alone? You know, maybe if I didn't have fake tags on my car, maybe if I wasn't out at 2:30 in the morning, but I didn't see that. You know, the denial was definitely present. So the last time that I got to jail, I was asked previous to that to do a bunch of stuff, and I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not drug testing. I'm not going to probation. I'm not doing any of that. Catch me if you can. And so at that time, I had a young son that I wasn't able to care for, man. I wasn't even able to stop using, you know, for the entirety of my pregnancy, you know, and that qualifies me right there. I got two recovery babies that I love, and I wouldn't even have thought being clean, like in recovery to use, you know. So at that time, when I was arrested, I was on the run for a year, and I was talking to my friends, and I was saying, it's the insanity of that. Like I couldn't stop using. I remember I was so miserable. I would see the police behind me, see red and blue lights, thinking people were following me. I couldn't care for my son. That was the unmanageability that brought me to Narcotics Anonymous. And so the last time that I was in custody, they gave me a good amount of time, enough for me to sit down and clear my mind, enough for me to kind of get my bearings right. Because I would go to jail I would get high in the parking lot when I would get out. I would go to jail and I would get high. I would go to jail and I would get high. I would go, the insanity of that, thinking that something's gonna be different, right? Doing the same thing and over and over, expecting different results. So the last time I made a decision to be clean, to try something different, and I checked myself, I applied for a program in custody, and a little flame began to burn then. I remember that, and I remember saying, maybe I can stay clean. And I began to go to NA meetings in jail, H&I. I was introduced to NA meetings. Thank you, God, to H&I, man. Like, and I also was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. So my mother, she got sober when I was young. So I had an inclination. When they had, they actually, and I don't go, I just do NA. I do one program. I don't even have time to do two programs. But I found my home in Narcotics Anonymous. But when I was in that treatment program in custody, they brought in Alcoholics Anonymous, these little old ladies, and it dawned on me, these people are coming in here, and Narcotics Anonymous when I was in general population, they're not getting paid, and I couldn't even fathom that at the time. You know, selfless service, they're coming in there, so it sparked hope in me, you know, and I had a desire to stay clean at that moment. And so I was in this program, and it wasn't a 12-step program. It was a behavioral modification. So they would tell me to sit down, shut the fuck up. They would tell me about myself. And I come from a childhood where there was a lot of yelling. There was like breaking things. There was just a dysfunctional environment. So I kind of thought it was funny when I was yelled at. That didn't do much for me. But what was beneficial at that time was the community, right? The community, the meetings. And so that program was the catalyst for me to go to a treatment program from custody. And so I had to go to another jail. I went, and I was in some dorm, and there was programming in there, but no, there was no H&I in that pod, I remember. I was like, damn. And I always recollect at that time, I only got 25 minutes, so I'm gonna have to speed this up. I always recollect that, how horrible it was. So I went from being in a jail for, I think I was there for 8 months in this one jail, and I was like, I got myself comfortable in there. I was in that program. I was a trustee. I was playing ping pong. I was full. I just made myself, I acclimated to it, you know? But that other jail, it was horrible. It was, I don't know what, there was like women having sex next to me, and I don't care if women have sex, but it was just like, it was a dormitory, there was like bunks, and I always remember that, because I've been clean for 24 years, so sometimes, thank you, sometimes, and I've been clean half my life, and you know, I just realized that, so what a blessing that is, man. So anyways, I don't want to forget where I come from. I don't want to forget that I fought the police. I saw cars following me. I thought there was red and blue lights behind me in the rearview mirror, and I just wanted to stop looking over my shoulder. So when I got out of jail, went to that program, and my life began. Somebody came into that program, and I used one more time. And I overdosed in that treatment program. That was the last time that I used. And you know, and I've been working in recovery for 17 years, and I'm so different today. I can't even fathom what a selfish act it is to use, and I know it happens, but for me, I'm speaking for myself, to use drugs in a treatment center and overdose. They called the ambulance. I had to go to the hospital. They pumped my stomach, gave me charcoal. That is not who I am today, man. That is not. So April 14, 2001, that was the last time that I put a substance in my body, right? And since then, I worked this program like my life depends on it, man. And the kid that I talked about before, I signed, I didn't know how long I was gonna do, and his father went to prison, so I signed over my rights, you know, because how would he get medical care? And thank God that his grandmother didn't take away from, take him away. He's 27 right now, and he's an active participant in my life, and thank God he doesn't live with me, but we're close. I love him. And I took care of him, you know. So since getting out of that treatment program, my life began. You know, what I do for my recovery today and what I did back then is the same, man. I go to meetings. It's ebbed and flowed for me over the years, you know. But I also dropped out of high school as a result of I started using at a really young age, went to juvenile hall. High school was taking up too much time to get loaded. I just wanted to get loaded. I didn't care about that, so I dropped out of high school. And so it says, and I'm on the 12th step right now, and it says in the 12th step that an element of a spiritual awakening is we find direction and we lose loneliness. Or I'm paraphrasing, I probably should read it, but I found direction in my life, and I'm not lonely today. And it's not because I have a husband, it's not because I have three kids, I have God, that's why I'm not lonely. Sometimes as quiet as it's kept, I'm more lonely with my husband, but I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's the void is filled from God today. So anyhow, so I found direction. I began working these steps. I got a sponsor, and I got here extremely broken. My spirit was fractured when I got here. And, you know, this kind of service, I just gotta say, this kind of service, LeBron knows this, like, I am very scared to get up on a podium, but this is not about me. I have an amazing sponsor that tells me this is not your life anymore, man. So, and predecessors told me when they ask you to share, I do things despite fear today because my faith is bigger than my fear. And I always say that I'm scared, yeah, but I'm gonna still do it. So here's the kicker, man. My direction was I went back to school for many years and I just got my master's degree last April. And without working the steps, without going to meetings, without a conscious contact with God, I would never have been able to do that. That was one of the hardest things. And here's the other kicker. I bought a motherfucking house. How? I mean, it's like, and so I had a direction, right? Because I worked the spiritual principles in my life, because I'm actively in this process. I put pen to paper every single night now. That wasn't all. I think the last maybe 8 to 10 years, my program has been on fire, man, and I'm gonna honor that shit because it has not always been that way. I've gotten in fights in recovery, I've lied in recovery, I've stole in recovery, I've cheated in recovery, and today that is not my story, man. And another thing, I'm gonna tell a story. Where's the dude at? I think I got some time. So I got my master's degree, and I'm starting a new job next Monday, not this coming up Monday, the Monday. And so I've had the privilege to work in recovery. And I work in the courts, right? And I was so intimidated about 4.5 years ago when I worked with judges, I worked with probation officers, and granted, I did not like the police, I did not like judges, I did not like attorneys, and I've come to realize they're just people, but I work with this amazing judge, I work with veterans, right? And I'm saying this because I'm gonna connect Narcotics Anonymous. So on Tuesday was my last day in court. I'm gonna try not to cry, even though it's okay to cry, I know. And I don't even expect no prestige or awards or anything. What I do in the courts to help other addicts and people with mental health and veterans is because I don't even feel like it's a job, to be honest. I feel so privileged, so honored to do it. And the feedback, so I got a little award, this beautiful award that says that I do selfless service. And the feedback that the judge gave me was like, you exhibit, he didn't use the word exhibit, compassion, right? And the people, these doctors and these attorneys, they said that you made me feel welcome, man. When I came to the team, you made me feel inclusive. And that's what I do. I my goal is to make people feel welcome that come in Narcotics Anonymous. And when he said that, and I'm like, don't cry, don't cry. And I fucking started crying. But what an honor, like who would have thought? That's a long way from working at Burger King to working in a court and having a judge tell me that I'm compassionate, man. And God is good. God is really good, you know. And so today, you know, and I'm gonna keep coming back. I am completely sold on Narcotics Anonymous, and I wish that everybody could surrender, right? But I am powerless over people, places, and things. I cannot carry the addict. I can just share my experience, and I try. I sponsor a lot of women now since I've gotten out of graduate school, and it's my sponsor's fault. I didn't take any new sponsees when I was in graduate school because I was doing an internship, I had a 40-hour job, I have an 8-year-old son, I have an 18-year-old daughter, and I have a 27-year-old. And the 8-year-old and the 18-year-old live with me. And then I got a husband that doesn't clean up after himself, so I clean up after him, I cook, all that shit. So I didn't take sponsees. And my sponsor told this girl, oh, call Angelina. She's available, and I was like, ah. Oh. So then, but thank God, you know, and I didn't, and again, I was afraid, but I took this one sponsee. She ended up moving to Mexico, but it was such a beautiful, like, she was working the steps. Now I got 10 sponsees. I don't even know how that happened, but, and they work, most of them work the steps, and I'm listening to their steps. Last week, I listened to a second step, I listened to a seventh step, and I'm getting fed, man. These women help me probably more than I help them, you know, and I get, and I'm on the 12th step, and for some reason, I'm totally enamored with this step. I said that about the 11th step, but the 12th step is so awesome, and it tells me, you know, you know what, I'm going to read it, sometimes I paraphrase stuff, and it's different, but, oh, it's right here. Most of us learn that we can only carry our message to someone who is asking for help. Sometimes the only message necessary to make the suffering addict reach out is the power of example. So an addict may be suffering but unwilling to ask for help. What can we do? We can make ourselves available to other people. You know, and for me carrying the message is keeping me clean. Right, and then I'm gonna read something else, and I'm gonna shut up. I'm just so grateful, but this is so God's will. So God's will, right? What is God's will? God's will for us is the ability to live with dignity, to love ourselves and others, to laugh and to find great joy and beauty in our surroundings. And you know what, you guys? I'm in God's will. We were laughing. We come from Northern California. I just bought a house. I moved to another area, to Monterey area. I haven't said that out loud, but I'm from Monterey area now, San Benito County. And I spent 20 years in another place. But the fact that I can travel with people, rent an Airbnb, pay for registration, go in a car that my friend's car that has tags, we're all legit, the tires, good tires, you know, and live with dignity, right? And I meditate today, and I watch, you know, I literally, I'm gonna say this, I promise, and shut up. So I literally, like, I bought a manufactured home by myself, like a few years ago, and I ended up getting some equity and buying the home. And in that manufactured home, there was two neighbors that smoked cigarettes, and I would try to meditate. I'd be like, fuck, and I like the cigarettes would come through my window, and I had this little, and where I lived was this beautiful area that had mountains, right? It's a phenomenal area, and I couldn't see the mountains. I would tell my husband, can you build me something on the shed so I can sit up there and get away from the cigarette smoke and see the mountains? And so I just bought this house a year and a half ago, and it's in a different city, in a more beautiful city. And I didn't even intend. And I opened my blinds, and I see the green belt, the mountains, and I meditate, and I thank God. Every day I wake up, I say, thank God for this. And I watch the trees, and I'm present, and I'm in the moment, and I enjoy my surroundings. It's all about perspective. My perspective today is I fucking love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to keep coming back, and thank you for listening.
Raffle time.